bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. So the Supreme Court just heard arguments in a very important case that has the potential to dramatically reduce the amount of time that some J6ers are serving. The case is called Fisher versus United States, and TNA senior editor Rebecca Terrell joins us to tell us more about that. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm good. So I was a little happy to see that the leftist propagandists are doing a little quaking in their boots. I noticed an article from Vox, not to be confused with Fox, the other more subtle leftist propagandist. And I want to read what Vox is reporting. They said J6er insurrectionists apparently had a good day before the Supreme Court yesterday. It appears after Tuesday's arguments that a majority of the justices will side with the insurrectionists. That's terrible. But anyway, that's actually what we're hoping for that. Tell us more about what happened.
Well, you know, we have to take issue at first with even the word insurrectionist.
Right.
To call this an insurrection is a gross violation of justice. But yes, okay, so let's go. Let's talk about how it can help. First of all, let's say, what is 1512C?
Fisher, that's the statute.
USA. Okay, so there were two J6ers who brought this to court, and they said, wait a minute. 1512C2 is a little piece of federal law that was added in 2002 as part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. It was after the Enron scandal. It was because people had shredded documents that should have been there to be used in the Enron case, right?
Right.
So they add this provision that says you can't obstruct or impede a judicial, well, it doesn't say, and the actual verbiage
is a congressional hearing,
official proceeding, right? But it has been used, precedent has been set since 2002. It is always used in reference to judicial proceedings because there's another section of federal law, 1505, that deals with obstruction of official proceedings such as congressional operations, just like the certification of a federal election. Now, what's the big deal between the two? They're both obstruction of an official proceeding. Well, 1512C2 carries a maximum sentence of 20 years, where 1505 carries a maximum sentence of five years. So that's a huge difference. Now, to get down to how it can actually help the J6ers, you have to consider that sentencing is based on this point system in the Department of Justice, Bureau of Prisons. So a prisoner is going to have points, and those points are determined by the courts based on the severity of the offense, based on even the prisoner's age, because as a prisoner ages, his points go down. You're considered less of a threat the older you are. You know,
I mean, a
73-year-old man is not going to be considered as much of a threat as a 23-year-old.
Yeah, they haven't met my father-in-law. Anyway, go on.
Right. So, I mean, there's a whole point system. And actually, we just had a case decided not too long ago, Brock. I've got my notes over here. And that was about these because they can enhance the judges can enhance the points too on a person. It can be based on a number of different variables, just like those that I've just delineated. So what we're looking at here is the potential if SCOTUS decides that 1512C2 was grossly misapplied, which it does look like they're going to decide that.
Yeah.
Because there's no excuse. I've been corresponding with several J6ers myself, which you can do if you go to patriotmailproject.com. It has almost all the J6ers listed there, where they are, where they're incarcerated, or if they're out, how you can correspond with them and keep their spirits up. And they really appreciate that correspondence. So I'd encourage everybody to
say that website again. So
it's called patriotmailproject.org.
Okay.
So, definitely encourage people to go there. But anyway, so we've got a situation where if SCOTUS decides that 1512C2 is misapplied, how that will affect the point system and the people who are already in prison, you know, it's going to be largely up to a judge to decide whether he wants to rehear that. And really, the prisoner too, and with his attorney, we need to bring this back to court. And of course, there are all the legal fees and all of that. So yes, we need to emphasize the word potential when we talk about the potential of this helping, because like, for instance, in the case of Larry Brock, who, by the way, is a military veteran with 29 years service. And he was spent 2 years in a federal penitentiary. This is maximum security.
Yeah.
This is not a camp or a low security or even a medium security. This is where terrorists and violent rapists and murderers are housed, and he's put in there.
Rebecca, let's go to some of the, I know we're going to play some audio in a little bit, but I want you to kind of set it up. And I also want to mention this, that apparently Justice Clarence Thomas asked the Solicitor General, who we're going to hear from in a bit, if this law has ever been applied to violent protests in the past. And her answer was no. But
it hasn't been.
Right.
That's another unprecedented thing about this, is we have all of the J6 judges referencing each other.
Yeah.
And J6ers call it judicial collusion. And I see why they do.
Well, apparently the Solicitor General's answer was, well, this is unprecedented too, what happened. And I guess you could say, I mean, whatever happened there has not happened before on the Capitol. But why don't you set up this piece?
I disagree with, there have been many times in the history of the United States when people have, I mean, look at Martin Luther King Jr. They set up whole camps along the National Mall.
Yeah, but they didn't rush in. They didn't rush into the Capitol, right?
Well, their doors weren't open for them to rush in.
Well, good point. But set this up. We have, this is an audio clip of Justice Gorsuch. He seems to be implying a lot of the other stuff that the leftists are getting away with, and he's tying it all in. Did I miss anything? Or
he absolutely is. He's talking about Representative Bowman, who pulled the fire alarm. He doesn't name his name, but he's talking about the sit-ins when the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings were going on. He talks about a lot. You'll see. I mean, you can easily read between the lines. So yeah, let's have a listen to
Let's listen to that. Please roll that.
If I might. So what does that mean for the breadth of this statute? Would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison?
There are multiple elements of the statute that I think might not be satisfied by those hypotheticals, and it relates to the point I was going to make to the Chief Justice about the breadth of this statute. The kind of built-in limitations are the things that I think would potentially suggest that many of those things wouldn't be something the government could charge or prove as 1512C2 beyond a reasonable doubt, would include the fact that the actus reus does require obstruction, which we understand to be a meaningful interference. So that means that if you have some minor disruption or delay or some minimal outburst,
okay,
we don't think it falls within the
outburst. My outbursts require the court to reconvene after the proceeding has been brought back into line, or the pulling of the fire alarm, the vote has to be rescheduled, or the protest outside of a courthouse makes it inaccessible for a period of time. Are those all federal felonies subject to 20 years in prison?
So with some of them, it would be necessary to show nexus. So with respect to the protest outside the courthouse, we'd have to show that, yes, they were aiming at the proceeding.
Yeah, they were trying to stop the proceeding.
Yes, and then we'd also have to be able to prove that they acted corruptly. And this sets a stringent mens rea. It's not even just the mere intent to obstruct. We have to show that also, but we have to show that they had corrupt intent in acting in that way.
We went around that tree yesterday.
I know. I heard the argument yesterday, but I guess what I would say is that to the extent that your hypotheticals are pressing on the idea of a peaceful protest, even one that's quite disruptive, it's not clear to me that the government would be able to show that each of those protesters had corrupt intent.
So mostly peaceful protest that actually obstructs and impedes an official proceeding for an indefinite period would not be covered?
Not necessarily. We would just have to have the evidence of intent. And that's a high bar.
They intend to do it, all right.
All right, there you go, Rebecca. We have
So all obstruction is equal, but not, but not all obstruction is equal. And he wasn't citing hypotheticals; he was citing historic fact.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's just Animal Farm.
Yeah. So it looks like good news. I mean, like I said, even it looks like even the leftists are saying, even if the court's three Democrats hang together and even Barrett hangs out, it looks like they might actually get this through. Thank you, Rebecca. We're going to be back and we're going to look at all the drama that's brewing on Capitol Hill, including the increase of Republicans who want Speaker Johnson ousted.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, the New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
All right, we're back, folks. So big-time drama is brewing on Capitol Hill. And joining me to discuss the next few stories are editor-in-chief of The New American Magazine, and that's Gary Benoit, and executive senior editor Steve Bonta. Steve, I'm going to go to you because let's talk about the most pressing issue that's happening right now, and that is the Alejandro Mayorkas impeachment articles. Apparently, was it yesterday, they were literally walked over to the Senate, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they may actually get a trial. What's happening there?
Well, there are a number of senators, GOP senators led by Mike Lee, who are saying in effect that they're going to obstruct all Senate operations. Mm-hmm. Right now, the confirmation of some particular nominee of the Biden administration, which apparently feels not terribly objectionable and would probably be confirmed. But in the Senate, unlike in the House, each senator as an individual has considerable autonomy and power and ability to bring the entire proceedings to a halt. The reason being that the Senate was created as sort of the American answer to, you know, the upper house of all these, you know, bicameral European legislatures, including the English, of course, where the idea was that the upper house would be the more deliberative body and would not be as prone to be swayed by public passions of the moment and all of this kind of thing. So the Senate was consciously designed with that in mind, that it would represent not so much the direct will of the people, but originally, of course, the states, the state legislatures.
Right, until the 17th Amendment, of course.
Sure, until the Constitution was changed. But there's some vestiges of that original culture still there. So, for example, the filibuster, which, of course, was a mechanism until recently, a broad-based mechanism, whereby a majoritarian group of senators could prevent a vote being taken on a bill. So the idea being is that in the Senate, at least, it's good to try to maximize the checks and balances, the offsetting factors to make sure that anything that does ultimately emerge from that chamber is something that has undergone thoroughgoing scrutiny.
Right.
Okay. So what's happening now is that Mike Lee and a certain number of senators have said, in effect, that until or unless the Senate decides to execute its constitutionally mandated duty of, in this case, trying an impeachment, the impeachment of Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, they're simply not going to allow the Senate to do anything else. They're not going to allow it to pass any legislation or to confirm any Biden nominees, anything else. They're going to bring it to a halt. Okay. Well, why is this? Because we're faced with a situation.
Well, Chuck Schumer's saying he's not even going to bring him in, which is unprecedented, right?
This is unprecedented. It's never happened before. Now, the Constitution does not say that the Senate must try any impeachment that's sent to it from the House. Mm-hmm. But that's always been the assumption. That if the House makes a decision, however ill-advised it may be, to impeach a public official, either in the executive branch or the judicial branch, lest we forget, Supreme Court justices can also be impeached, and it has happened at least once in American history, okay? That the Senate is then under an obligation. It's not an option, but it's under an obligation to then try that impeachment. Now, they can they can have the trial in a very desultory, perfunctory way and politicize the heck out of it as they've done countless times before and say, in effect, no matter what the evidence is, we don't care if you have a body bleeding out. We're not going to convict this person because he's part of our political tribe.
Right.
And obviously, that's the outcome.
Why do they not? Because
in this case, Senator Schumer has been so he has calculated that he can get away with what's now being called it's the latest nuclear option. This term is often deployed for somebody, usually a Democrat, breaking with longstanding tradition in the Senate and saying, we're just not going to honor this particular thing. I mean, a few years ago, the nuclear option in the last decade was getting rid of filibuster, you know, the filibuster for, I think it was judicial nominees or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was done, again, by the Democrats led by then-Majority Leader Harry Reid.
Okay? Right. Then McConnell used it and they brought in Trump's now.
Right. And then, of course,
and they got mad.
Once that was done, of course, the Republicans deployed it against the Democrats, and they cried foul. Okay, but the point is that now for the second time in roughly 10 years, the Democrats, with their seemingly unquenchable, unslakable thirst for absolute power, have decided that it's just unacceptable that the House gets to dictate to them that they should put on what they consider to be politically a very risky trial. Because even though they're already determined that no matter what the evidence is, they don't care. Mayorkas is part of their tribe. They're not going to actually remove him from office.
Yeah, we know that's...
Plus, he's doing the bidding of the establishment in a spectacular way by bringing in millions upon millions of... And we need to get into that right now. But the bottom line is, he is the deep state's guy right now. He is probably one of the key people bringing about this accelerating radical left revolution in the United States. Okay,
right.
So they're not going to jettison this guy. They're not going to turn him. However, if it goes to trial in the Senate, that's going to get a lot more unwanted publicity against the Democrats, refocusing public attention on this immigration crisis, and they don't want that. So they're prepared to say...
Isn't it getting publicity now, though?
Yeah, it is, but they're even more. So they want to just they want to simply say, we're just not going to do it. We're going to shelve it. We're going to table it. And we're simply going to ignore our constitutional duty because we don't want this thing getting any more exposure than it has. So this is an absolutely contemptible act of cynical political calculation.
Right. But looking at it from the point of view of the Democrats, though, it seems like their cause would be better served if they pretended to have a trial. You know, they could have a trial that's one day. They could go through the motions and say, okay, there's nothing there, and
they're not going to be able to, but they're already doing
the research and they've been doing the pollsters and they've been, they know what they're doing. They're out there and people are telling them, look, you got to squash this thing because the optics are bad and they're already bad and they're going to get worse. If you have a 3-week trial in the Senate, lots of media coverage. And you guys sit up there poo-pooing the notion that all these millions of people coming in, that this is anything other than a criminal act.
Yeah,
that's just going to get more and more people more and more enraged, and we don't need that right now.
I mean,
I'd
imagine, Gary, like when the Senate is focused on something like this, it would make it even hard for the propagandists not to say something about it. And like you said, the optics, I think the polls are showing that even Democrats, I don't know what the majority of what the portion of Democrats are who could see this as a problem, but even Democrats, normal, sane Democrats who aren't aware of the fact that their party has been captured by complete communists and Marxists, even there, they're concerned, and the numbers are bad. The numbers are really bad nationally on the border.
But let's suppose this. Let's suppose that the Democrats do not allow a trial to take place in the Senate, despite the fact that they're constitutionally required to do so. And let's say that the Republicans then employ their own nuclear option, which is to say, okay, we're going to effectively shut down the Senate.
Which is what they're threatening to do,
which is what they're threatening to do. Wouldn't the optics for that look bad from the point of view of
the Democrats? A nuclear exchange in the Senate, yes.
No, but I bet you, the thing about it is they have the propagandists on their side. So they're going to be able to twist that narrative to make it look like, look, again, the party of chaos, Republicans are once again imploding. They don't get anything done because that's what they're talking about in the House. Well, that's what they're saying in the House. This is the most disorganized, chaotic conference ever.
Well, but let's not understate this. What the Democrats are now contemplating is nothing less than dismantling one of the most important checks on executive power, and for that matter, judicial overreach, which is the power of not just impeachment, but trying the impeachment. I mean, impeachment means nothing if there's no guarantee that it won't be acted upon.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you take the, if this is allowed to stand, it's going to say to all future would-be abusers of power in the executive and judicial branches, you don't need to worry about impeachment anymore. If the Democrats, if it's a, you know, if the right party is in control of the Senate, mm-hmm. they'll simply dismiss the impeachment. They will refuse to hold a trial, and the impeachment will just be a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and of course, that's what this says.
Right, and if you can't impeach somebody for basically bringing about the destruction of the country and convict that person in the Senate, what else can you impeach somebody
okay,
for?
It's just politics. These are policy issues. You know, that's another argument I think we've had earlier. But yeah, I mean, that's because that's what the left is saying, is that the Republicans disagree with policy issues. It's not that he's breaking any laws.
In this case,
laws.
The policy issue is the survival of the United States of America. Because well, in this case, how do we survive if we do not have borders?
In this case, Mayorkas is not upholding the law. It's mm-hmm. clear. I mean, we went through a list of things that he's not doing. That, you know, catch and release and all the stuff that is allowing all these immigrants into the nation. All right, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about this growing support for getting rid of Speaker Mike Johnson.
Self-reliance. It's not a phrase we hear much in our culture these days. It might conjure up images of pioneers, the West, rifles, strapping men, and strong women. But what does it mean for us in today's world? The New American Magazine has just released its latest collector's edition, Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. In it, the New American authors outline the necessity of self-reliance for a free people, tips for self-reliant living, and the importance of not giving up hope. This unique edition includes articles on the self-sufficiency of the founders, preparing for a worst-case scenario, firearms, financial self-reliance, the importance of community, and many other topics by expert writers. Now, for a limited time, the New American is offering a bundle of three collector's editions, Self-Reliance, The Great Reset, and Trump World, for just $19.95. Available at shopjbs.org. Visit shopjbs.org today.
There's only one person right now who can stop us from going into what happened last fall, and that's Mike Johnson. He's cleaning the barn, that's obvious. He had three things to do. He wanted to do an omnibus that broke all the, you know, spending records. He wanted to do FISA without warrants. Now he wants to do Ukraine. Those are the three things. There are people riding him like a horse here. They don't care when the horse collapses. I do, because it's going to throw our conference into turmoil. If he would do what John Boehner did, when John Boehner had at least announced that he was cleaning the barn and said, I'm leaving, whatever it was, 8 weeks hence, or when you find somebody to replace me. If Speaker Johnson would do that, we could go without ever being speakerless, and we could be in control of it in the conference. But I'm afraid he is dead set, and the people who are pushing him are dead set on riding that horse until it collapses.
Congressman, can you want him to resign? You want him to resign?
Yes. Yeah, I asked him to resign.
What did he say?
He said he would not. And then I said, well, you're the one who's going to put us into this. Because the motion is going to get called. Okay. Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called. And then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy. And I have told him this in private, like weeks ago. He spent more in the omnibus than Nancy Pelosi spent. He violated the 72-hour rule. He reauthorized warrantless spying. In fact, expanded that program. And now he's going for the Kentucky Derby's May 4th. I got to use an analogy here. He's going for the trifecta, the triple crown. He is going to pass the Ukraine bill that most Republicans in America are against. We need a speaker who is not doing everything Chuck Schumer wants.
All right, guys. So MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, I think was the first to start talking about this. And I don't remember, was it the omnibus? Is that afterwards or after FISA? But Steve, let's go to you first. What do you make? I mean, we talked about this. You're a little worried that if Mike Johnson goes, we might even get worse, right? Is that...
Well, first of all, I'm not exactly sure what clean the barn means, but I've never heard so many equestrian metaphors folded together into one single press release.
You know he lives off-grid.
He's from Kentucky, so it's understandable. It's a horse state, But anyway, no, I mean, it's looking more and more like, which would you rather have, a flawed Mike Johnson or a radical left Hakeem Jeffries, because that's where this is probably headed. I mean, after our own illustrious Congressman Gallagher retires at the end of this week, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be down to a one vote margin.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if there's any miscalculation, we're going to have the most radical left speaker ever, and Hakeem Jeffries. And make no mistake about it, this guy is going to, if and when, probably when he becomes Speaker of the House at some point, you know, he's going to make us yearn for the good old days of Nancy Pelosi. Okay?
Wow, that's just a bold statement, Steve.
Yo, no, he is an absolute gimlet-eyed radical left revolutionary.
Well, tell us about Marxist. Him. Tell us.
He's kind of in the same mold as Barack Obama, only with a little harder edge and a little bit more finesse than what's her name, the pop-eyed person, lady from Brooklyn. She hasn't been in the news for a while, so I forget her name. But
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, Popeye, really?
Yeah, I try not to think about her very often, so the name just goes right out of my head. Yes, right.
Well, that's why she has an acronym, right?
I suppose, but I can't keep that.
Alexander Cortez.
Marjorie Taylor Greene has an acronym, too, and I'm always forgetting what's MGT or MTG or MTJ or what is it, whatever it is. But anyway, yeah, so this is the, you know, the sort of Hobson's choice that we have here, and I'm not sure I'm ready to see... You know, Hakeem Jeffries in position, because if he gets to be speaker, that's going to bring to an abrupt end the investigations into the Biden family, although we haven't heard much about them recently, so it could be that they're being allowed to die a quiet death anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the Republicans are nothing if not feckless. Mm-hmm. They are past, you know, tried and true over and over again masters of rescuing defeat from the jaws of victory. And this seems to be no exception. So I'm not sure, much as I respect Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie and others of their ilk who probably will sign on to this measure, I don't know that it's politically wise at this point. I think you know, Hakeem Jeffries may be a bridge too far. It seems to me that the more pragmatic thing to do would be to hang on to this latest incarnation, this latest rhino, until the elections, and then see if we can't get... you know, Jim Jordan or somebody like that in as House Speaker, assuming we could hold the majority, and some of these current rhinos are ousted. But maybe
I disagree. And I think the most significant thing, Steve, that Thomas Massie said in the clip that was played was the very last thing he said in that clip, which is that
we need someone who's
doing everything
that Schumer wants him to do.
Right, that Mike Johnson is doing everything that Schumer wants him to do.
So what's the difference?
So if that's the case, aren't we better off with the person who was doing those things being somebody who is a recognized evil, so to speak, somebody we recognize is a person who is working to destroy the country, as opposed to a wolf in sheep's clothing, as opposed to somebody who is considered conservative because he's a Republican, but actually doing everything that Chuck Schumer wants?
Well, I guess that's a good debate to have. But what in the world?
It's good to have some disagreement here once in a while.
Yes, we don't usually.
Well, I mean, it's what in the world happened to Mike Johnson? There was so much hope, and he's gone off the freaking rails. And now we have four budgets coming up, right? Or is it three or four? Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and I think there's another. And so this, they say, this is the last straw. The fact that he's coming out,
right,
and it's like $90 billion.
And that may be the cleaning of the barn. I don't know for sure.
Well, that's what he's...
That may be the cleaning of the barn that Massie was referring to.
That was part of the trifecta he's talking
about. You know, let's ride that horse, in this case, the horse being Mike Johnson, to get everything the Democrats want before the Republicans remove him as Speaker.
What are you smiling about, Steve?
Again, the horse metaphors, I can't get past that. But no. I'm still not sure what they mean by, you know, Johnson's cleaning the barn. I mean, are they because for me, you know, cleaning the barn, you know, conjures up images of like the Herculean labor of the Augean stables, which is sort of the classical equivalent to, you know, draining the swamp, as we would say now. And that's clearly not what Mike Johnson is doing. No, so I find it a perplexing metaphor. I think what they mean is maybe... and maybe this is a Capitol
Hill
metaphor.
He's just carrying out all the agendas of the left.
Yeah, so I don't know how that equates to clean the barn. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Come on, get over it.
I guess my concern is the celerity at which all of this is happening. With the proverbial wolf in sheep's clothing minding the flock, we at least have the luxury of some time.
Mm-hmm.
But as we saw during the first 2 years of the Biden administration, when everything was controlled, not just by the Democrats, again, lest we sound like we're being too partisan here, but by these radical left,
Marxist
ideologues is the word I'm looking for. The process of destroying the Republic sped up exponentially. Okay, I mean, if for example,
you mentioned investigation, that's something we would not have gotten.
Well, right, sure. I mean, that's going to stop. Okay, had the Republicans managed to maintain control of the Senate, arguably this guy Mayorkas would never have gotten confirmed to the Department of Homeland Security. So these things do have consequences. Now, one could argue that's just kicking the can down the road, and maybe we need to go through all of these calamities for people's eyes to truly be opened up. I don't know, but I do know if we get Hakeem Jeffries as Speaker of the House and the Democrats effectively take control without there even being an election, okay, that is going to be another body blow.
I want to mention something that Thomas Massie said later in this clip that we didn't, a part that he played. And so the question was like, how is this going to bode well for Republicans in the election? And his answer was, well, we're already slated. It looks like we're projected to lose the House anyway. But maybe if we do this, then the people will be inspired to vote for us to get us, because they'll see that we got some backbone. We're standing up for what they want us to stand up with. That's his reasoning.
Well, I think that's good reasoning, because if the Republicans do not display that backbone, if the Republicans simply go along with the Democrats, what good are Republicans anyway?
Right, right.
And isn't it wonderful that we do have good Republicans such as Thomas Massie and Jim Jordan? Yeah. There are some of them.
And I'm sure there's...
It's an open question, though, as to whether they're ever going to be able to turn things around and whether there's a partisan solution to this issue, because I don't see the Republican Party ever becoming, in any majoritarian sense, the party of saving the Republic and the Constitution. I just don't.
Well, that's debatable, but what is essential is Republicans and Democrats or whatever party affiliation, they need to start being constitutionalists.
You're right. Thank you, gentlemen. After this, we're going to be talking about foreign aid.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
All right, folks, and we're back. And joining Gary is John Birch Society Research Associate Peter Rykowski. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Paul. Great to be on.
So this is our action segment. That's what we like to refer to it. And I understand that today you're going to talk about foreign aid and how listeners and viewers can help perhaps put a stop to some of that.
Yeah, foreign aid is a really big topic for this week because the House of Representatives is going to vote this weekend on four foreign aid bills.
Yeah, we brought that up last.
Right. Yeah, one for Ukraine, then one for Israel, Taiwan, and then a fourth bill that's just a mishmash of all sorts of smaller things like banning TikTok, selling Russian assets, more sanctions on Russia, Iran, China, etc.
Those work so well.
Yeah, so a vote will happen this weekend.
They might as well just pile the cash and just light it on fire, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, and then I did hear just an hour ago that they want to also vote on some minor border security bill that will pass separately from that. But as we all know, what will probably happen is the U.S. Senate will, all of these bills will go to the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate will pass the globalist bills that send
torpedo the
money.
Other.
Right, yeah, and then they won't do anything on the border security bill.
Yeah.
You think there's a possibility, Peter, that the U.S. Senate will not vote on these bills because the The Democrats are refusing to have the Senate undergo its constitutional responsibility to have a trial on Mayorkas and convicting him for his violations of the Constitution.
Right. I think it's certainly possible, especially because the Senate a few weeks back passed a $95 billion omnibus foreign aid bill with all sorts of things. And even in the last few days, Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell and all the other globalists in the Democrat and Republican parties have been calling on Johnson to simply pass that bill rather than the individual bills.
Yeah. And it looks like Johnson's trying to strike this balance. He's got, obviously, the conference, the Republican conference, they're very angry at him. And it seems like by cutting up these bills into single spending bills, which is what Matt Gaetz and others have been saying, we need to get to that. So I guess, in a way, that's a good sign. But it's like, what are the chances that these things aren't going to get through? And I guess that's why you're here. It's like, hey, here's what you can do to help to make sure that maybe they don't get through, right? Is that our position here at the John Birch Society, is we don't want these to get through, right?
Right. All foreign aid is unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution makes it very clear what Congress can do. And anything that's not mentioned in Article 1, Section 8, Congress does not have any authority to do. Foreign aid is not mentioned in Article 1, Section 8. So any bill giving money to foreign countries, whether it's Ukraine, Israel, or any other country, is unconstitutional. And Congress has no authority to actually pass such legislation. So we oppose all foreign aid.
Yeah.
And Congress needs to reject all of that. And instead of passing these bills, instead of funding the borders of foreign countries, we need to actually get serious about funding our own country's southern border, which is a total disaster right now.
Yeah, I mean,
of course, that has a lot more to do than simply lack of funding, doesn't it? Because there's actually a policy on the on a part of the Biden administration to have open borders in violation of U.S. law.
It's refusal to uphold the laws, the immigration laws, and that's the. That's the argument from a lot of the Republicans, which I think seems like a good one, because they, I think Speaker Johnson was a couple months ago. We talked about he had some sort of like 66 laws or 66 ways that Mayorkas or DHS basically reversed Trump era immigration policies that led to the disaster that we have now. So it's not even a matter of necessarily funding. And even Border Patrol, I believe, has said something to that degree, right?
Right. And also I want to point out, in the Senate bill, you know, it was $95 billion for for foreign aid. And then all the other bills that have passed, you know, it's tens of billions of dollars going to foreign countries. If all of that money were instead redirected to our borders, that would be much more than enough to actually secure a border, and significantly more than what we're already spending on the border. So it has nothing to do with the lack of funding. It's purely the will to actually secure borders.
Yeah, I think we all know that, unfortunately. So what kind of tools do we have as far as helping folks who are listening and watching to pressure, I guess, the senators at this point, because it's the Senate, right?
Well, the House still hasn't voted on bills.
Oh, that's right. Right. I'm sorry.
Right. So it's both U.S. House, U.S. Senate, but it's really important to contact all members of Congress, regardless of, you know, whether it's in the House or Senate. Right now, we have two legislative alerts regarding foreign aid. One specifically for Ukraine, then another specifically for Israel, which are the two major topics that people are talking about right now. For both countries, it's unconstitutional. So, you know, it's not about necessarily the individual country, but just the fact that there's no authorization in the Constitution for this, and we should instead be spending the money on our border. So we have two alerts for that. So if anyone goes to jbs.org/alerts and then look at our federal alerts, they can find these. And then we have a separate alert for border securing our borders. Mm-hmm. And we encourage anyone to use that, because Congress really needs to put this on the agenda.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson, unfortunately, has not been emphasizing this, you know, to the degree that he should be doing.
Yeah, I wanted to add, but then I thought about it and I'm still going to do it. But I want to get you guys' thoughts. You know, we talk about the Overton window, what's acceptable conversation, or we talk about, you know, things that the general public generally believes that may be wrong or right. I think when it comes to these foreign aid bills and all this money that we spent overseas, I actually don't think the American people are that far behind. I think what we may have instead is this wide chasm between what the, again, on this issue, like many others, between what the American people do want and what legislators are going to do anyway. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the American people want America first. And that's why Trump won.
Yeah.
In 2016, and of course in 2020, the evidence is overwhelming that the election was stolen. But I'd like to specifically point to Israel because certainly the media is doing everything it can to create the perception that if you are against foreign aid to Israel, that
you're
means
anti-Semitic.
You're anti-Israel, you're anti-Semitic, you're anti-Jewish. And
yeah.
Of course, that's not the case at all. We have Jewish members in the John Birch Society, for example. Baba Unger, a lawyer in Long Island, I can think of one example, who is very pro-Israel. And in fact, I believe he has at least one son. He may have others living in Israel.
Yeah.
But he is against all foreign aid, U.S. foreign aid to Israel. But he's also against all U.S. foreign aid to Israel's enemies. And it's ludicrous that we fund Israel's enemies
and
as
Israel.
Well as fund Israel. And then we use the funding to Israel as a club to try to get Israel to do what we want Israel to do instead of the Israeli government being able to put Israel first, which is exactly what the Israeli government should do.
I also want to point out that some conservative Israelis want to stop U.S. foreign aid for Israel because
it affects their ability to fight back, right?
Right. Yeah, the U.S. government gives money to Israel, and then the U.S. government tells Israel what to do.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. We've heard that narrative multiple times. I think we are so way past the part where we pay attention to any of these nitwits who go about and, you know, they try to label everything anti-Semitic. Apparently, I learned last week or 2 weeks ago, apparently there's some sort of like dictionary that basically labels everything or what's considered anti-Semitic. New World Order's anti-Semitic,
right.
Illuminati's anti-Semitic, all the stuff that points to the fact that there is a New World Order, there is a global conspiracy. And as we've detailed in this show and various articles and everything like that, it's not a Jewish one. There probably are Jews in it, but there's lots of other. It's like it's not anti-Jewishness. It's not anti-Semitic.
Well, the thing is, when somebody who has a Jewish background starts supporting or working for the conspiracy for global control, that person is anti-Jewish regardless of his background. Just like somebody who may be Catholic in name only, such as Pelosi,
yeah,
or Biden. They're not Catholics when they're supporting anti-Catholicism or supporting anti-religion,
yeah,
or supporting anti-God or anti-man.
Globalism is anti-human. Apparently, we veered way from foreign aid, but make sure to use those federal legislative alerts. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Gary. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more Truth Behind the News and join us again tomorrow.